Hello again, and welcome back to the Real Fix podcast, your fix of real life stories. I'm Hattie Bishop, I'm a journalist, and I help people share their stories with the national newspapers and magazines. I'm joined each week by a selection of my lovely colleagues who help run our news desk, who will introduce you to some incredible people telling their remarkable stories. This week, we meet the woman whose life was torn apart when her 17-year-old daughter was murdered by her evil boyfriend, the same day she told him she was pregnant.
He'd strangled her three times, brought her around twice, third time she didn't come round. She had a footprint on her head, on the right-hand side of her face, under her skin, where he stood on her head, and he beat her up beforehand.
And, this is incredible, we'll meet the woman who has no idea she does it, but buys online shopping in her sleep.
I've bought like a basketball net set, like, you know, the big, with the backboards, everything. It was like the full set. I was buying cookie jars, paint, salt and pepper pots, like really random things, girls' clothes. Why would I haven't got a girl.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. Like, I was really buying really random stuff.
Now, it should be one of the happiest days of your life when your daughter tells you you're going to be a grandmother. But for Samantha, it turned out to be her worst. Her daughter, Jaden Parkinson, who was 17, had just announced she was pregnant. But joy turned to horror when suddenly she went missing. Police were called and a search was started. But then every mother's worst nightmare, her body was found. She had been murdered by her boyfriend, Ben Blakely, the father of her unborn baby. Lucy Bryant spoke to Samantha about the moment her life changed forever.
She went missing the day I spoke to her about her being pregnant. I left her about 2:30 that Tuesday. I'd say by 7:00 that evening, he'd already murdered her.
It's so terrifying. And then because at the time she was just declared missing and Ben wasn't named at all. But did you suspect him as soon as you heard?
Yeah. As soon as they rung me on the Wednesday and said she'd gone out that night to see Ben, she hadn't taken any clothes or anything, just in what she stood up in, I knew something was wrong. I was due to go to France that Friday till after the new year, and I thought he'd actually kidnapped her to keep her there so I wouldn't go.
Do you remember then, obviously, the moment that the police came to your door and to say...
They didn't. It took them 13 days to even be bothered about my Jaden. I did, on the Friday that I should have gone to France, I rung up missing persons and we did a poster for Jaden that day. It wasn't until the 13th when the murder squad picked it up and said, this should have been done 24 hours into her being missing.
Mm.
The police didn't. We was ringing every day. We rung all her friends. We was ringing the police, giving them the crime numbers, giving them new telephone numbers of friends, etc. Because there was two coppers that at that point didn't follow up on Jaden because she was an annoying teenager and they got a slap on the wrist because neither of them would accept the responsibility of it at the misconduct thing.
Which is awful. And then it was 13 days later that you found out then that Ben had been arrested on suspicion of murder, but without a body.
Without a body, yeah.
And what was going through your mind? Obviously, the thought that she might still be alive or there might be her body just somewhere waiting to be found, or how the hell did you feel at that point?
At first, I was hoping it was bullshit and he had kidnapped her and to keep her away to stop us from going to France. But I knew... She weren't coming home.
No, it's that same gut feeling that you had at the beginning. It's so awful. And do you mind telling us a bit about the details that were later revealed in court about her death?
He'd met her on the Magdalen Bridge. He'd walked her into Oxford City. They'd boarded a train to Didcot. He walked from Didcot train station into the middle of the countryside. They walked through fields to get to a little bridge which is in the middle of a field where people used to hang out, where they used to hang out, smoke and drink and stuff. And he put a knife in one end of the bridge, told her not to cross past it. And apparently they had an argument because he didn't believe that the baby was his and that she fell off the back of the bridge, which is like a foot and a half off the floor. He said that he heard gurgling noises. He tried to resuscitate her, but she died. The autopsy report said that, no, he hadn't tried to resuscitate her. Mm. He'd strangled her three times, brought her around twice. Third time, she didn't come round. She had a footprint on her head, on the right-hand side of her face, under her skin, where he stood on her head.
Mm, so awful.
And he beat her up beforehand.
And then he, because the reason the body wasn't found is because he'd sort of developed quite a, I guess, a well-thought-out
very, very
plan.
Very, very clever, well-thought-out plan. He knew when he was 12, if he'd killed somebody, he would bury them in an existing grave so the DNA would mix together.
Which is terrifying. And it was his uncle's grave, wasn't
yeah,
it, that he
that's
picked?
That's exactly what he did. He got suitcases. He got a suitcase from his grandmother's because at first he hid Jaden under brambles under a tree and in a little ditch thing. Then he got his little brother to come out and dig a hole, which apparently he then told his brother to go away. He put Jaden in it, covered it up, and they went along their merry way.
Then he got
lifted for Jaden, interviewed, but then let off because he told them he thought she'd got in a car with Asian people, which is exactly what he told Sade on the 9th, which is the day he moved her body.
Okay, so he buried her initially in the field where she was murdered, and then moved her in a taxi of all things.
Yeah, in a suitcase in the back of the guy's taxi. Got the taxi driver to help him lift her into it, and the taxi driver commented, "Man, your bag's heavy." He said, "Yeah, my girlfriend's kicked me out. It's all my worldly goods. That was my worldly goods. That was my baby in that suitcase."
Oh, no.
he got out of the taxi because he dragged that suitcase across the field as well. He was covered in mud, they both were. Apparently he told Jake to go away. He had stripped her of all her clothes. She had on a vest, a pair of knickers. He put her in face down, tucked her feet behind her back into the back of her knickers, and then covered her up.
It is so horrendous. And that was, then he just replaced the turf on top of the grave.
Nothing had happened because they took the top of it off. So they distributed the extra soil that accounted for her body around the graveyard. You would not have known that had been touched if it hadn't been for the police cadaver dogs and a special helicopter that they've got. They did a 10-point thing around Didcot, where an archaeologist will do a recce, basically, of what he thinks Ben would have done. And it was the church, the field, and somewhere else that they'd found that he'd been to and her body had been to. It's broke everybody. Nobody understands what it's like because they can't, yeah? Mm. Unless you've had somebody or something like this happen in your family, you can't even begin to imagine. Do you know what? I wouldn't want you to either.
No.
Because some of the things that we heard and that we saw can never be unheard and never be unseen, yeah? And they are the things that haunt a family forever.
Try and move on,
basically. You know, it's like, this is our 7th year this year. And I just think, I don't know, I'm scared. I'm scared he's going to come out. I'm absolutely terrified he's going to come out. I really am.
Bless you.
I'm more scared of that man than I am of anything in this world, honestly, because I've got grandkids. And that is what scares me the most, because he is twisted. He's a psychopath. He's a sociopath. He's narcissistic. He doesn't care. He took her to see so that he knew where her nephews and nieces lived. so that he could use them against her. Same as me, he told her she would be stood over my bed watching him turn off my support, life support, that Christmas. That is why I never believed he would kill her. We thought it was going to be me. I told my housing officer, who was his housing officer, on a certain day, I said, if anything happens to me, I'm telling you and my care worker from Elmore that it's to do with Ben Blakely, and I've told you that I fear for my life and that I want it recorded today that if anything happens, you are to point this out to the police. And it was Jaden that he killed, not me.
Samantha there, speaking to my colleague Lucy in a very moving interview. So, what happened to Ben Blakely, you might ask? Well, he admitted manslaughter, but was found guilty of murder and jailed for a minimum of 20 years. The jury was discharged after failing to reach a verdict over Jake, Ben's brother, who was accused of preventing the lawful burial of Jaden. He denied the charge, but admitted perverting the course of justice, for which he was jailed for 3 years. There you go. Just another fascinating story here on the Real Fix podcast, even if we do say so ourselves. Now, don't go anywhere, as later on we're speaking to the woman who can't stop buying things in her sleep. Yep, she doesn't even know she's doing it.
One of my first things I ever ordered was £100 worth of Haribo sweets. It was like them big 3 kilo bags.
Did it come to the...
quite a lot.
Did it come to the door and you were like, what is this?
Yeah, well, it was a really heavy box. The guy had to help me in with it. I was like, what's this? And then when I opened it, I thought, oh no, like, what am I going to do with this?
If you want to hear more stories like this, click subscribe or follow on your favourite podcast platform. But first, a real shocker. I'd like you to meet an unlucky bride. Sasha, who's 28, is from New York City, and she faced every woman's worst nightmare. She was jilted at the altar on the day of her wedding. And just when things couldn't get any more weird, her wayward ex begged for her back just days later. Let's find out what she decided to do. She caught up with Charlotte Penketh King, Holly Sawyer, and Neve Butler-Walton.
Well, we grew up together. So we grew up in the church together as kids. So as kids, we never really spoke that much. We only spoke to each other as we got older, as we joined the youth group and everything like that. It would be like a high bye situation, but we started getting closer as we got into our teenage years. But I knew him for a very long time, since I was a kid.
In that run up to the wedding, did you get any inkling that he was getting cold feet or...
You know what? Absolutely not. I know that's a question that a lot of people have. And no, because even when I would more say that, not that I was getting cold feet because I was ready after 10 years, obviously. But even me, I was like, you sure you want to have a big wedding? Let's just, you know, I was still telling him, no, we could still do like a destination wedding or something. I still was saying, giving him examples. And he was like, nope, no, no, no. We're having this wedding. We're getting married. He was very adamant about it. So I had no clue whatsoever that he was either planning not to show up or he was, you know, having cold feet or whatever the case was.
Mm. And how are you feeling on the morning of the wedding then?
I mean, the morning of the wedding, I'm super excited. I'm soaked. All my bridesmaids are here. The groomsmen are on their way. His mother, my mother, all our families are on the way. So I'm like, I'm not nervous because I'm not really a nervous person. I don't really get nervous like that. So, you know, I was just super like excited. I just kind of wanted to get it done and over with because I was ready to go on my honeymoon, to be quite honest with you. You know?
Yeah, sure. And where was Kevin getting ready and who was he with?
So he was supposed to be getting ready with his groomsmen at the hotel that they were. So we both booked two different hotels, one for the groomsmaids, one for the bridesmaids. So he was supposed to be getting ready with his groomsmen at the place. And then they would have changed to the venue spot. And that's where they would have met us.
And had you heard from him that day? Had anyone kind of been in touch with him that you knew of? Or
absolutely. We were talking every hour on the hour. I spoke to him. I saw him the night before. I spoke to him the night before. He literally said, I love you. I can't wait to marry you tomorrow. That's what he said. And then I spoke to him. He was on speaker. you know, and then he said it again. I love you. I can't wait to marry you. I can't wait to see you. You know, how's everything? I'm on my way. Everyone heard him because he was on speaker, you know, and all the girls were like, oh, oh my God, you know. So like, you know, so we were talking literally the whole entire day.
So when was the first point that you started to realize that something actually was a bit weird with him?
So the first time I realized, because I didn't realize anything was weird with him, because he kept up this persona as if everything was okay. And clearly, I guess it wasn't. But the first time I actually felt that everything was okay was two different instances. There was one instance when one of my bridesmaids, which is his cousin, called me. She came into the room and said, my brother's calling. And he's calling the venue for directions, and the venue's telling him, well, what do you need directions here for? And then that's when the brother said, oh, well, such and such, you know, is getting married here today, and I just wanted to know the directions to the venue because I'm getting lost. And then the guy was telling him, there's no wedding scheduled for today. What are you talking about?
Wow.
So that's when she came and told me, Sasha, is there two different venues in Long Island? Because they're saying the wedding is not. And I said, no. There's two venues by the same name, but the one that your brother called is the correct one.
Mm.
And then that second instance was literally when my florist called me and told me, that's when I knew there was something awry. My florist called me and said, hey, the venue is not allowing me to set up the flowers or the tables or the decorations. I said, what are you talking about? You know, I was in complete like shock. I was like, what are you talking about? You know, so that's when I knew, obviously, there was something very, very wrong.
Yeah. So what did you do then? Did you call him?
So then, yeah. So then she told me she would call me back. So she said, you know what, let me figure this out. Maybe they have some sort of mistake. And then she would call me back. So she called me back and said, oh, Kevin is missing a payment. I don't know if she wasn't being too clear. She didn't want to tell me what was going on because she didn't want to stress me. But she said, Kevin is missing a payment. So they're waiting for him to come in to complete the payment. And at that point, I was surprised because I'm like, who pays for a wedding the same day? He told me he finished making all the payments. So that was kind of strange,
yeah.
You know, because I was taking care of every other aspect of the wedding. He was in charge of the venue, you know. So then that's when she called me back and said, yeah, they're waiting for him to come and make a payment. And that's when I called him. He's like, yeah, he's on his way to make the payment. So he still was carrying on as if like everything. So then I went about my business and I continued getting my makeup done because I didn't think anything was wrong.
Yeah.
What happened from there then? You got your makeup done. Did you then head to the venue or?
No, so I didn't head to the venue. I was still in the hotel room, and that's when everybody, all our family members, everybody started getting together and stuff like that. And that's when, you know, we started getting phone calls all over the place. Like, there's guests are showing up and they're making a big stink. They're saying, oh my God, why are people showing up to this venue? Yada, yada. What's going on? There's no wedding schedule for today. So that's pretty much what, you know, so then we started making a couple of phone calls. We called Kevin, we called the manager. And that's when, you know, when I spoke to the manager, that's when I knew, wow. Yeah, guess I'm not getting married today. He pretty much laid it all out there on the line.
Yeah, what did the manager say then?
Pretty much what I could tell you is the manager pretty much yelled at him and told him a line that I will never forget in my life. He said, you tell your fiance that you are a liar. You didn't give me not one red cent. And if you don't get here by 2:30 p.m. with the money in full, there's no wedding. If you get the money here, then we could come up with some sort of a wedding for you. But if you don't come here with the money in full, then there's no wedding. And he apologized to me, and you know, and that was pretty much it.
That's kind of the point that you realize this isn't happening. I'm not getting married now. Yeah,
absolutely.
I can't even imagine. How did that make you feel? How did you react?
To be honest with you, I was so numb and I was so in shock. I didn't even cry. I didn't actually cry for a couple of days because I was so in shock, you know? So it was just shocking. That's the only thing I could pretty much tell you. I felt like I was in a trance. I felt like I was in another world, in another planet. I felt like it was unreal. I felt like it was a dream. It was a nightmare. Like this couldn't be real life. That's how I felt.
Mm. And at one point, Kevin sort of said that he was stuck in an Uber. Who was he saying that to?
So he was saying it pretty much to everybody. He was saying it to me and he was saying it to like two of my bridesmaids. He was saying, oh, he's stuck on the Southern State Parkway. He's stuck in an Uber. The Uber broke down. And like, you know, he's trying to get another one or whatever the case was. he was never in the Uber. He was home the whole time. We believe he never even was on the Uber at all.
Yeah.
It was all lies.
Yeah, so then one of the bridesmaids kind of went out and sort of had a look for him. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. So one of my bridesmaids, Katisha, she's so cute and so beautiful. She literally said, you know what? I got to take charge into my own hands. That's actually his little cousin that he actually helped raise and everything. So she said, you know what? I have to go look for him. He said he's stuck on a southern state. His Uber broke down, not knowing that this was all lies. Let me go get him. I have a car. Let me go pick him up so we could, you know, we could figure this out. Mm. So then she ends up getting into a car accident. Mm-hmm. Totaling her car, and the other car was totaled as well. So we all end up going to the hospital in full gear, you know, bridesmaids and groomsmen. You know, we end up going to the hospital, and, you know, people are looking at us like crazy, like, what's going on? Like, you know, is this a wedding party? Like, you know, just in shock. Everybody was just in shock. They didn't know what was going on.
Yeah. And was Kevin kind of informed of what had happened to her? Did he have a reaction to that at all, or?
Oh, yes. And actually, that's not in my book. So I'm actually glad to share this with you guys. So as I was, I spoke to one of my groomsmen a couple of weeks later, and he mentioned to me, because a lot of people don't affiliate or don't associate with him anymore, including some family members, because of this behavior. You know, it's just very wild and absurd. He told me that when he called him and said, hey, do you know that, you know, your lie or whatever happened, you caused Katisha to get into a car accident. She's really badly hurt. She's injured. She's in the hospital. We're all here. Where are you? What's going on? His words were, and I quote, his words were, well, I didn't tell her to come after me. And at that point, you know, his good friend that he grew up with was in shock. So he felt like he didn't hear him correctly. So he went ahead and put him on speakers for all the groomsmen to hear him. And he said, he made him repeat it. He said, what did you say? I didn't understand what you said. And then he repeated it again. And that's when they realized, wow, this guy is not, you know, the person that we knew. This is a whole different person. You know, we're dealing with a whole different animal at this point.
Yeah. And then obviously, you know, that evening, you'd kind of woken up in the morning and thought, you know, this could be my wedding day. How did you end up spending that evening, obviously knowing that, you know, you had all these kind of expectations for the day and it, you know, ended up so, so differently?
So a lot of my friends didn't want to leave me. Obviously, my family members were very disappointed. They just wanted me to come home and just stick with them. But I know, like, they would, you know, talk and it would be like a nightmare the whole night. So a lot of my guests, which are close friends, we decided to go out to dinner that night. And they all, like, were supporting me. They all stayed with me pretty much. That's how I spent the night.
And so when did you actually next hear from Kevin after that?
So after that, a couple of weeks later, I heard from him. You know, he was apologizing and saying how he would like to get married in December. And he's so sorry. He was he had a nervous breakdown is what he told me.
So what did you say to him?
And then I said, no, like, we're not getting married in December. Like, that's fine. You know, I kind of just wanted to get the gist of everything of, you know, why he did what he did, what went down, you know, what could have been different and stuff like that. I had no intentions of getting back together with him because anybody who could do that to you definitely does not love you or care about you. I more so wanted to know why, you know. But yeah, that's pretty much it. After that, I cut off all connections and all ties with him and everything. So throughout the course of the relationship, there was a lot of red flags that I saw, but I chose to ignore them out of love. You know, love is blind. I chose to, you know, put them off to the side. And had I listened to those red flags, I probably wouldn't have ended up in the situation, you know. But I put all my feelings, all my emotions, everything. I was always going to become an author. I was always going to write. That's my passion, you know, aside from being like a nurse practitioner, you know. So I just put everything, my whole being, I just threw it into the novel, you know what I mean? And then that's how I was able to cope with the situation. And luckily for me, I had family and friends who was there with me throughout the whole entire time. So I was very grateful. And because of my faith, I was able to move on as well.
Yeah, it's really good that you're able to kind of channel such a horrible thing into creating something nice that's going to help other people. Are you dating again now?
Absolutely, because I definitely don't want anybody, you know, going through this. This was like horrific, you know, and, you know, anybody could go through this, guys and girls. I had a million people, you know, DM me or send me an email and say, oh, my God, this is the situation I've been in. And, you know, to see you so like, you know, strong, this is helping me move on and stuff like that. And the reason why I also wrote the book is because I really wanted people to get the gist of it. You know, a lot of people, you know, they go on social media and they hear about this story and they think it's so bizarre, but they didn't know the full story. So what I do is I kind of, you know, tell them the story of what happened that day, and then I take it 10 years back.
Sasha there. And to make things fair, we approached Kevin for a comment, and he did admit that he didn't show up to the wedding, but said it wasn't intentional, it wasn't planned, it just happened that way. He added something personal had happened, which he didn't want to discuss, which prevented him from attending. He denied trying to win her back, but admitted that he'd said the relationship could be repaired if she was willing. Well, what a shocker. If you enjoyed that, please rate, review, and subscribe to this podcast. And now, not sure you'll believe this next one, we're off to Essex to meet Kelly. Kelly has a rare sleeping disorder, which means she loses control of her purse and somehow unconsciously goes on spending sprees in her sleep. I know it sounds unreal, but the disorder is real. It's called parasomnia. Without knowing, she's bought fridges, Wendy houses, Haribo sweets, and even a basketball court. And the list goes on.
Well, I always sleptwalked as a child, which is quite common, you know, just doing the usual things, walking around the house and stuff like that. And then I had that kind of settled down, and then I had a little spurt when I was taking my GCSEs. But as an adult, it started after I had my son, Henry, and I was a single parent at the time, and I would... Firstly, I'd noticed that like the doors was open and things like that, and windows, when they wasn't open when I went to bed.
Right, so you'd literally be leaving the front door and stuff open.
Yeah. But obviously I didn't say anything because I was a bit frightened of that it might be me sleepwalking. And I wasn't sure, you know, obviously if you go to the doctors and you're a single parent on ground floor, you're saying, oh, I'm leaving my door open at night. It didn't look really that great. And it wasn't very often. And then Henry became quite poorly. And then that's when it kind of got more intense. And I did actually wake up in the garden one time. So I knew it was me at that point, that I was definitely the one that was walking around and doing things. So I was laying in the garden a very cold October night.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and I woke up thinking, why am I here? So that kind of started to happen. It was just like the little things, opening the doors and leaving them open. Yeah, and that's when it really started to get more intense.
And is that when you were diagnosed with, is it called parasomnia?
No, I've only just not long had the diagnosis. Because basically everything was put down to stress. Because I had Henry that had disabilities, and being a single parent, everything was always put down to that. I did have a couple of sleep studies. I was under a couple of hospitals. And again, nothing significantly was standing out on these tests. They all put it down to stress. And that's all I got all the time. And then I had my other children and everything got a lot worse. And I was adamant, it can't be stress. Like, I can't be doing this just under stress. And that's when I pushed to get more help.
Because I'm not sure what it is, but can you tell me a bit about what parasomnia is?
So, yeah,
sorry,
basically,
I said that really badly.
No, you're right. It is basically sleepwalking and doing things within your sleep when you're asleep. That's my understanding of it, parasomnia. So you are asleep but doing other things. I didn't want to go asleep from that point because I was so scared of what I was going to do next for my family, really. So I kind of just stayed up. So I was just in a right mess. And that's when I obviously wrote to the consultants
So you were just trying to stay awake so that you couldn't do any harm to yourself.
Yeah. So you and that's exhausted. Really hard when you're very tired.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And is that when the doctors were still saying up to that point that you were just stressed?
Yes. Yeah. And it was only when I met Dr. Samuels at Basildon, he was the one that was said, right, okay, we'll look at this. Because I literally went there and I just said, you need to help me. Like, I don't know what's going to happen in my life and I'm frightened.
Yeah.
You know, no one believes me.
I mean, so how did that feel, kind of going to bed every night and not knowing what was going to happen when you woke up? Like, how was that whole process for you?
It's, like, really depressing, actually. Like, really, because I didn't want to go to bed. I was frightened. And bed becomes such an issue that, you know, I didn't want to go to bed. And my husband would have to, like, make sure all the doors are locked and hiding the keys. And, you know, we was trying to put safety measures in place for myself. We put a lock on the medicine cupboard and things like that. And it's just silly things that you don't think that you have to do. But to keep me safe, and, like, I kept saying to him, can you not sleep and can you watch me? Yeah. You know, can you? But he's a typical man, unfortunately. He heads hit the pillow and he's asleep.
Yeah.
So that, you know, he was like, oh, yeah, I'll make sure I'll keep an eye out. But, you know, I just thought, oh, what am I going to do? So I ended up just, like, staying on the sofa most of the time.
So did it have a negative effect on your marriage at all?
It didn't, because I think Jamie saw it firsthand that it was something that I could control. I couldn't control this. So I think that, you know, because he knew that it was something I couldn't control, he understood it, particularly as well when I obviously took the overdose when I was pregnant. I really thought he would be upset then. And I really, you know, I was frightened, not frightened in that way, but I was frightened because I didn't want to lose him. And I didn't want him to think that I'd done that to our unborn child on purpose. You know, I'd never harm our children. And but he was really understanding and really was like, right, let's just make sure the baby's okay and you're okay. And then we'll just put, he's very logical. Like, he's like, okay, we'll put locks on this and we'll do that to make sure it don't happen again. And that's kind of how it is. So he's quite supportive in that way and very good like that.
Yeah. And then obviously, I know we've kind of touched upon it already, but going to that point where you eventually did, you know, have the courage to go and say, you know, to the doctors, you know, I think this is a problem. I think I need to do something about it. How did you go about that?
Well, I wrote letters. I wrote letters to all the consultants that had been under their care. And it was Mr. Samuels, Dr. Samuels, that from Basildon Hospital, was the only one that replied. Mm. And he was the only one that gave me a clinic appointment to come back and see him.
Mm.
And he was the only one to try new technology on me and new tests and basically try to see if there was a reasoning.
Yeah.
So I can't thank him enough. I owe him everything. I would go to the fact that I owe him my life, to be honest, because I don't know where I would be without him.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, what was the kind of diagnosis that he gave you in the end?
So I had some different sleep studies, but they were actually done at my home address, which all the other ones had all been in a hospital setting.
Mm.
So I had the stuff to take home and I slept, and then they do a report after that. And he called me back and he basically said that it might not explain why I'm sleepwalking, but there is evidence that you're not breathing. You've got sleep apnea. He said, so I think I want to treat you for the sleep apnea and see how that impacts on everything else. So he gave me a CPAP machine, and I will tell you the first day I got it was the 30th of November, and I slept that night and I woke up. And I've never felt a feeling like it before, that I'd slept for the first time, I think, in my life.
And that oxygen whilst you're asleep, sorry, that machine?
Yes. Yeah, it's an oxygen mask on your face. Like, everyone has slightly different ones. There's several different machines, but mine is a full mask. If you think of it like a nebulizer type, but it's not, but that kind of look. And it puts pressured air down your airways. So when your airways start to close in the night, the air pressure gets higher, so the air pressure opens them up.
Wow. And you just felt like a new woman after you'd had a proper sleep.
That it was amazing. I literally was, I couldn't believe the difference. I had no daytime tiredness. I took the children out. Like, I had the biggest smile on my face, I think. Well, it was so different. To experience it is the only way. Like, I don't think people would realise how I felt after all these years. I thought, I've slept.
Right. Do you get your full 8 hours now?
Well, because of my children, I've got 3 children with complex medical needs. So that I can't be, that can't be helped. So my children are a bit up and down, but I have been getting really great sleep. even though I might get 4 hours a night because of my children, that 4 hours is good quality sleep.
I had a really quick question. You mentioned spending money online while you're asleep. Do you know how much how much you spend?
I think in total it would have been 3,000 plus across the years.
Wow.
At least.
Wow. Did you get any of that back at all?
Not a lot of it, because if it's food or things like that, they won't refund you. One of my first things I ever ordered was £100 worth of Haribo sweets. It was like them big 3 kilo bags.
Did it come to the
quite a lot?
Did it come to the door and you were like, what is this?
Yeah, well, it was a really heavy box. The guy had to help me in with it. I was like, what's this? And then when I opened it, I thought, oh no, like, what am I going to do with this? But my son was really happy. I was just weak, so we had Haribos most days. I think I did about over £3,000 worth.
What kind of things were you buying?
I've bought like a basketball net set, like, you know, the big with the backboards, everything. It was like the full set. I was buying cookie jars, paint, salt and pepper pots, like really random things, girls' clothes. Why would I haven't got a girl. I don't know. Like, I was really buying really random stuff.
Was this on like a particular website? Was it on eBay, Amazon, or was it just you shopping around?
I'd probably say more like on them sites, because that's the sites that I shop on. Mm. Yeah, it was pretty much all on that and Asda's.
Kelly there with a very expensive nocturnal habit. And that's it for this episode of the Real Fix podcast. I hope you've enjoyed it. Thank you so much for listening to us. And don't forget, you can read more of our stories on our website, real-fix.com. And please give us a 5-star review. And do follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Real Fix UK. If you've got a story for us, get in touch. See you next time.